military veterans, and active duty service members. You could become a certified cyber warrior with just 12 weeks of training at My Computer Career. Cybersecurity specialists are in high demand, and IT pros with these skills often enjoy abundant opportunity and a great lifestyle. Protect our people, liberty, and treasured institutions from cyber threats. SkillBridge and other VA benefits are available to those who qualify. Learn more at mycomputercareer.edu/CWP. That's mycomputercareer.edu/CWP.
Okay, folks, you are listening to the latest, greatest, I hope, episode of Life on Planet Porky with myself, the Porkmeister, and, of course, the rocker chick writer extraordinaire, Ms. Leslie-Ann Jones. And, Leslie-Ann, I have to say to you, welcome to Freedom Day. As we're recording, we're free again. Or are we?
Well, we're not really, are we? Nothing's changed. Yeah. You know, what can you do? You can have a few mates in your garden. You can, have a picnic in the park. Mm. Nothing. Yeah, okay, we're not in lockdown anymore. But other than that, what really has changed? They're still saying work from home if you can. Mm. Stay within your own area. Don't go driving long distance or anything like that. So we're kind of still partially locked down, is my understanding.
Yeah, I was out at about 6 this morning and I did notice a great deal more activity on the streets at that time in the morning than I've been witnessing, you know, the past few weeks. Seemed to be more people heading to the station, more cars on the road. But for instance, as you quite rightly say, Freedom, I haven't been to see my sister in Bournemouth for over a year and I normally go every few months, you know, and I still can't go because you're not allowed to stay overnight in another household.
So you haven't seen your sister for a year?
No, I haven't seen her for a year. Her birthday's on March the 15th. I went down for her birthday last year and haven't seen her since. I haven't seen any of the family. I haven't seen my niece, nephew. I haven't seen my other sister because of the circumstances involving mixing households, you know, and distances.
Mind you, I don't know what I'm talking about. I've got two sisters and a brother and I haven't seen any of them for all that length of time. But I have seen my mum because I'm in a bubble with my mum. She lives by herself down in Kent and I do go and look after her and do shopping for her and stuff like that. So,
yeah, good.
I have been able to see my mum, but the rest of my siblings haven't been able to see her. So that's terrible.
It is shocking. Now then, Miss Jones, I read that choirs got back to business yesterday. Were you lucky enough to be able to get up to St. Bride's in Fleet Street and listen to a celestial choir?
I did attend St. Bride's on Palm Sunday yesterday.
Wow.
And it was fabulous to be back after such a long interlude because our church has been locked down. We had 3 cases of COVID and the rector, along with the Archdeacon of London, decided between them that it wasn't safe to keep the doors open. Mm-hmm. So yesterday was the first time back, saw lots of friends. Yep. It was really great. We don't have a full-blown choir at the moment. We have a quartet.
Yes.
But with a quartet, you can create the choral music and with the organist and so on. On Easter Sunday next weekend, we are having a bigger choir. And we will be doing all the usual fabulous Easter music. So head on down to St. Bride's. But you've got to register if you want to attend. And the service is wonderful there. You need to go on the website and just, it's free to come, obviously. But you just need to let them know if you would like to so that they can, you know, adjust the numbers and the seating and all that kind of thing for safety reasons. But
That's
do great. Come if you can.
Oh, I've got to get to St. Bride's at some time. And that takes me on to another issue. I mean, God, talk about me showing my age now. I read this query on a newspaper. Question, why is the national newspaper industry referred to as Fleet Street? I mean, golly, have we been away that long that people don't remember the, you know, the great print industry in Fleet Street and the magnificent clock above the Daily Telegraph and the black Lubyanka of the Daily Express building? Surely the culture of the newspaper industry hasn't been forgotten so quickly, has it?
Well, it's an interesting thing you say that. My kids only know that Fleet Street is synonymous with the newspaper printing and publishing industries because I worked there for 25 years.
Sure.
But I don't suppose very many of their friends would know. But because this is a classic metonym, isn't it?
When
a metonym is when the name of a place is the same as the industry that is known for being in that place.
So, for example,
you've got Harley Street, which is private medicine, as well as being a street in London. Madison Avenue in New York, which is the advertising industry.
Mad Men, yes, that's right.
Westminster, we say, don't we, which is the London borough, but that stands for our government.
Yes, it does.
And things like City Hall, which is the mayoral seat.
Yep.
Beverly Hills, which we know is a neighbourhood, but also stands for rich and famous people.
Mm-hmm.
What else? The palace, we say, don't we? The British Royal Family and its stuff, but we say the palace.
Yes.
And we say the Hague when we mean the International Criminal Courts and the Courts of Justice in the city in the Netherlands of that same name. I'm very fond of metonyms. I collect them. I keep a list.
Really?
Yes, I have done because I'm that kind of nerdy person.
No, I think you're a wordsmith, so obviously interested in words. Is Hoover a metonym?
No, because it's not. There's a Hoover Dam, mind you. I don't think they make Hoovers there.
No,
I tell you where they make Hoovers, in South Wales.
Yes, they do. What I mean is a Hoover is really like a machine to suck dust off a carpet. But, of course, it was first made by Hoover. Everybody else makes them now. We don't call it a Dyson, for instance, do we?
Well, no, that's a whole other subject because we've had this argument before. Yeah. Most people do not have a Hoover. They have a vacuum cleaner by any other name.
Absolutely.
That isn't a Hoover, is it?
No.
So we wouldn't refer to every car as a Volvo.
No, we'd
say
true.
Car or whichever brand name it is.
Yeah, unless we were in Sweden, of course. The second biggest export in Sweden is Volvo. First biggest export is still ABBA. Can't believe that, can you? But it's absolutely true.
Yeah, I do. I do believe that.
Yeah.
You know, there's an ABBA museum. In Stockholm.
I must go, definitely.
Let's go.
Definitely, we've got to go. That's got to be on the list of things to do once the real Freedom Day comes. Now, you will have been following the saga of our old friend Piers Morgan. And I have to say, I have huge respect for Piers because it's all very well people having said, oh, well, you know, Piers is a multimillionaire. He'll get a job somewhere else. So really, you know, it didn't matter about him walking out. But he walked out of a very powerful and influential position. He had the biggest stage on breakfast television in Europe, I would say. And he gave it up on a point of principle. You'll have read what he wrote in four pages in the Mail on Sunday. And he said he had a sleepless couple of nights and he had to toss with his conscience. And in the end, he decided he couldn't live with himself if he'd apologised as he was ordered to by the ITV bosses.
And it's not the first time this kind of thing has happened with Piers.
Yes.
Do you remember he quit CNN because of the outrage over his views on gun control, for example?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
And there was a similar situation at the Daily Mirror. Whatever people think or say about Piers, he's a man of principle.
Yeah.
He quit Good Morning Britain because he did not believe Meghan Markle.
Right.
And he said, didn't he, reached a moment of total gut clarity.
Yes.
When he said, look, I'm not going to apologise for disbelieving somebody because I don't believe her. And he also said this, in a democratic society, I should be allowed not to believe someone and to say that I don't believe them.
Yes.
And that surely is the very essence of freedom of speech, which I have to say, I really admire him for that.
I do. And I exchanged a couple of notes with Piers and he thanked me very much for, you know, expressing that point of view to strengthen his belief that what he did was right and it was good for our profession. The other thing, of course, and not enough has been made of this, is that it's since been discovered that the couple misled us on the claims that they got married 3 days before the official wedding. If that was untrue, what else was untrue that she was telling us?
Well, that's always the problem when one chink in the armour suddenly flashes up and then people think, well, you know, what about the security of the rest of it? But, okay, so let's give Meghan the benefit of the doubt here. She could well have misunderstood that a private blessing, which lots of people have, by the way, they have a little private blessing in addition to the marriage ceremony itself.
Yes.
What I didn't understand, and this is another issue, is how they were able to get married in church, which they did, when she was divorced and her original husband is still alive.
Mm-hmm.
Because technically, under the rules of the Church of England, one is not allowed to do that.
Yeah, I understand that. And that's why Charles didn't get married for the second time in a church, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
I mean, obviously so his wife wasn't alive, but her husband was. Yeah.
Yes. So that to me is the bigger issue. But I do think that if the Archbishop of Canterbury decided they could have a little blessing in the back garden, maybe it wasn't explained to Meghan precisely that this is only a blessing. These vows that you make are not legally binding.
Yeah.
That's what happens in church tomorrow or whatever it was.
But even if it is that, even if it is a misunderstanding, then she's been reckless in the way that she's been delivering that information to the world, because it was easily checkable. Was there a license exist? Was it issued and all that? So what I'm saying is, you know, even if she is mistaken in her belief about the wedding, she should have clarity on these huge allegations she's making about things. But anyway.
It's very obvious to me that they were, well, by they, I mean Meghan and Oprah Winfrey, they were gunning for the British and for the royal family. They were determined to have their day in court, as it were, and to damn all of us for our attitudes, for our racism, for whatever else they could throw at us.
Yeah.
And it is very disappointing.
Yes.
We gave her a fantastic wedding. We embraced her with open arms. We all thought how brilliant to have a mixed race family in the royal family, to, you know, the children that we would welcome, that would be, this would bring the royal family into the 21st century. And now all of that is ruined, and we can only blame her for it.
Yeah, well, OK, blame game or whatever. The final thing I'd say on that is that you'll have noticed that the share price for ITV has gone down, and audiences have slumped from a peak when on Piers's very last day, they overtook the BBC for the first time, and those audiences have slumped. And I think I've told you this story before, but exactly the same thing happened to me at TalkSport, the radio station, but a big bust up over Al at Cheltenham many, many years ago. It's a story that's well documented. And Al was let go, and he was, you know, the star of the breakfast show with me. And the audience just disappeared, literally. And of course, the commercial department went running around in panic. I had to go and find Al in a wine bar in the city of London and get him to come back. But we had to pay him a lot more money when we got him back than we paid him before he went, because that's market forces, you know?
Well, and doesn't this show you the value of a brilliant broadcaster?
Yes, of course it does.
So all those people who were fans of Piers, and I know that there were lots who weren't, but my mother used to put GMB on every morning, and she'd say this to me, "I only put it on just so I can turn it off again, because I can't stand the bastard," she'd say. But okay. I'd say, give him a break, Mum. You know, he's a friend of ours. He's always been really good to me and very supportive, and he was my boss at one point.
Yes.
But Piers is now, his stock has gone up. He is of immense value to whichever broadcaster he goes to next.
Yeah.
And all his followers will go with him.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with all of that. Tell me, during the course of your rock reporting career rather than your rock book writing career, did you ever come across Peter Doherty and Kate Moss?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm sure I told you about that brilliant night in the Groucho Club when Jackie Stevens, who we know and love, the television
columnist. Yes, that's right, yeah.
Was singing at the piano after we'd been at the Mail on Sunday Christmas party, actually.
Right,
the features. And she was a bit worse for wear. And she was singing away at the piano. And Kate Moss and Pete Doherty were sitting at the bar. And Kate Moss got down off her stool and she came over to Jackie at the piano and said, do you want to shut up? And Jackie said, well, no, I don't think I do, actually, and carried on singing. Mm. At which point, Kate Moss said, if you don't shut up, I'm going to smack you. And so Jackie carried on singing. So Kate smacked her. And then next thing, they were on the floor brawling. It was like a playground fight. And Doherty standing at the edge going, Kate, 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 like this. It was one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
Really? God, brawling with Kate Moss on the floor of the Groucho Club. That's quite something, isn't it?
Isn't it?
I wish there were some pictures of that. It'd be great.
No cameras in the Groucho Club, unfortunately.
No, for obvious reasons. But the reason I ask is, and I don't know if you saw these pictures, because I know that you are a select reader. Yeah, but the pictures of Pete Doherty absolutely shocked me. He's now living in France with a new girlfriend. and he is at least double the size he was when he was the waif-like boyfriend of the world's most famous model. Some say, oh, well, you know, it's his new life, he's clean now. He looked very ill to me, I have to say.
Well, this is what years of drug abuse will do to a person. You know, his drug habits are well known.
Yeah.
He's only 42, and if I looked like that at the age of 42, I'd be very worried because he doesn't look healthy.
No.
And he shouldn't be carrying that much weight. Yes, he was out walking a dog. He's got a perfect right to do that, of course.
Yeah.
He's a private figure. But he, to me, ought to be addressing his health issues here.
Well, I totally agree with you because he looks like a fat slob. He does look much older than 42. And what amazes me is that a lot of rock stars these days and people you've known much better than me, Ray Davis, David Bowie, people like that. One of the reasons I'm told that they stick thin these days is because of all the drugs they abused when they were younger. It actually makes you thin and gaunt and skull-like, you know. He's gone the other way, which I would suggest to me there's something badly wrong with the boy, you know, to look like that and have doubled his weight. And also, from my own history of health problems, I see heart problems in that boy. When your heart goes, right, and of course your heart's the first thing that's affected by overdosing on ketamine and heroin all the time. When your heart goes, you put on massive amounts of weight because the heart cannot pump fluids around your body. And I looked like that before my heart failed acutely 15 years ago.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you're right. And it's not a good look. David Bowie, of course, isn't stick thin-like because he's 6 feet under.
Of course,
You know. He needs to address his health issues. Perhaps he doesn't want to. It's none of our business. But if I were him, I'd be doing something about it.
Yeah, I certainly would as well. Talking about the world of rock stars, he's not really a rock star, but a celebrity. I've seen a whole spread of pictures of Brooklyn Beckham, that's obviously the son of David and Posh, with his girlfriend, who is 26, Brooklyn's 22, and talking of his devotion to her. You know, they even got their milk baby teeth given to them by their parents and put them into pendants, which they wear around their neck. Now, you know, I know it's all, you know, very out of this world and very wealthy parents and all that kind of stuff, but frankly, for a boy of 22 to be so devoted to one girl at his age, I find that extraordinary, particularly when you're Brooklyn Beckham and you could really have your pick of quite a lot of young ladies, couldn't you?
Well, and he has, from what I hear, because he was part of a social group in London that my own kids ran with at one point.
Okay.
22 is way too young to settle down. Yeah. It's an interesting thing because at that age, 22 and 26, that is a big gap. Women are more mature than men anyway throughout our lives to a certain point. So at 26, that young woman is infinitely ahead of him.
Yeah.
22 is quite young these days. And I would say far too young to be thinking about settling down. So, yeah, I do have misgivings about it, really.
Yeah.
I think it might come unstuck. You know, these days, the earlier they marry, the more likely they are to divorce.
Yes. No, I totally agree. I've always felt a bit sorry for people who describe their, you know, their relationship as schoolgirl, schoolboy, sweethearts. I think, what? So you've only had each other since the age of 16. I mean, I don't care how much in love you are or how devoted you are to each other. That is not a good way to go through life, is it?
I don't think so. I mean, you know, recently when everyone was raving about Jimmy Greaves, weren't they? And somebody put on Facebook something about, oh, Jimmy and his child bride.
Yeah.
And they'd been together since she was 13 or something. And they married. I think they got married when she was only just over 16, something like that. And I think, actually, I love Jimmy Greaves, but there's something rather distasteful about that.
Well, I think it was in a different era because I think Tom Jones got married when he was about 16, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. And also John Blake was married by the time he was 19.
Was he?
Yeah, a colleague of ours on Fleet Street.
Is he still married to the same woman?
Sadly, she died recently, Diane.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But they were together for all those years and they had a very happy family, lots of grandchildren and so on. I suppose you just happened to meet the one. I mean, the Queen was 12 or something when she met Prince Philip. There was some amazing footage on TV the other night of them on a boat somewhere when she met him for the first time. He was already a naval officer with the British Royal Navy for some reason, given that he was Greek or is. He was introduced to the Queen on the bridge, and she was a little girl sort of leaning over the barrier there, asking him questions and stuff. She was just a kid. So, yeah. Sorry, but there's something a bit creepy about that, I think. For them to grow up so that you can marry them.
I agree. Look, we're in such different times these days, aren't we?
Yeah, we are.
Remember that, you know, life expectancy really was about 65 in those days. That's why you got your pension a woman got a pension at 60, man got a pension at 65, because life expectancy is now about 30 or 40 years longer. I mean, in the Middle Ages, they got married when they were 12 and they were dead by the time they were 24.
Yeah, I know. Do you know what I think, though? I wish we could sort of cut out the ending bit. Instead of being an adult by the time you're 20, let's say, why can't we have another decade at the start rather than have another decade at the end?
Yeah, no, totally agree with you.
Do you see what I'm saying? Yeah. So why can't childhood be longer? Childhood is so short.
Yes, it is.
And if you think of all the changes that you go through, for example, between the age of 10 and 20, that's massive.
Yeah.
All those developments that you experience between being a little child and a grown-up, all crammed into 10 years. Wouldn't it be better if we could make that last 20 years?
Yeah, no, it's a very, very good point. You go from being literally a child to a fully blown adult in about 8 years, don't you? And pass through all the stages of adolescence and all the turmoil and all that in between. Yes, we've become a pair of philosophers here, Miss Jones, putting the world to rights. Talking about, you just said you saw footage on the TV of the Queen. There's a terrific programme currently airing about Jack Charlton and his life, right? And you've told me your stories of Jack Charlton. And I've seen a bit of it. It's very moving and very touching, you know. Dwells a lot on his professional life and what he did outside of football, and then sadly dementia that cut him down.
I've missed this. I've been moving house and stuff. I need to catch up on this.
I need to
watch it. He was a wonderfully charming man
in
a very sort of gruff, rough around the edges way. But he worshipped my father. They were friends for a long, long time.
Yes, Ken Jones.
When I did a piece for You magazine some years ago, it was they wanted a piece comparing the brothers as they were in the 90s.
Yeah.
And it was such a different experience going up to Manchester and being met off the train by Bobby, who had such gentlemanly manners and took me out to a very smart hotel for lunch and so on. When I went to Jack's, it was completely the opposite. He was still out fishing. His wife picked me up from the station, Pat, and put me in front of the television, and I sat there waiting for him to come home. When he came in, eventually, it was to bring me a massive bottle of supermarket gin, a huge bottle, you know, those plastic massive 2-litre bottles of tonic water, and he just plonked them down on the coffee table with a pint mug and said, help yourself. There was no finesse. But they made me welcome. I stayed the night. I had breakfast with them the next day. And they were just so lovely and charming in a different way.
How lovely. Really lovely. But I'll tell you just a little story about... I'll tell you in a minute, actually. It's a story related to another story. We haven't got a Beatles story yet, so we're going to do that next and link that to Jack Charlton. Right, OK, folks, thank you very much indeed for joining us this fine day. I'm the Portmeister, Ms. Leslie Ann Jones, of course, rock chick writer extraordinaire on the other end of this line as we bounce wisdom, wit and knowledge between studios. Now, Ms. Jones, I've got something awful to tell you. Wisdom, wit and knowledge may be one thing, but this morning, right, you know, I mean, you've had a very, very busy week. I know, you know, you've been dealing with all sorts of domestic situations and new book ventures and all that kind of stuff. So we've all got our heads full of stuff all the time. Guess what I did this morning whilst I was getting through some papers, answering the phone, texting somebody? I picked up a bottle of bleach or a squeeze container of bleach and I sprayed it on my sausages in my sausage pan. Because I'd picked it up instead of the sunflower oil that I spray on my sausages. So that really was a very bad mistake.
Well, how did that happen? How do you keep the bleach near the cooker?
I don't. What it is, right, is when I say bleach, it's, you know, it's a white plastic squeezy one, which I keep next to my sink. And I pick it up half a dozen times a day and spray it on the surface or spray it on the taps or something like that. You know what I mean? It's always there, particularly in this age of COVID and everything that comes into the house is sprayed. You see what I mean? And so it moves around the kitchen a bit. And just completely absentmindedly, I picked it up And I was going to spray some surface, but instead of which, I looked at my sausages in the pan and thought, I haven't sprayed them yet. And I sprayed the bleach all over them. I have a picture of the bleach on the sausages. And the minute this this podcast, Life on Planet Porky, is available to the world, I shall accompany it with a picture of my bleached up sausages.
So what, you didn't actually eat them, did you?
No, of course I didn't.
At what point did you realise that you'd bleached them?
Because as soon as I put the bleach down, I thought, I wonder why I picked that bleach up. I can't remember cleaning a surface. And then I looked at the, I didn't even remember doing it. And then I looked at the sausage pan and the sausage pan was full of bleach.
It's easily done. You know, I cleaned my teeth once with bathroom sealant in the dark.
No.
You know those tubes of bathroom sealant?
Yeah.
Just staggered into the bath. I must have been drunk after a party or something, I suppose. That happened often in those days.
Yeah.
Staggered in the bathroom, picked up this tube, squeezed some on my toothbrush, and start scrubbing my teeth with bathroom sealant. Had a mouthful of glue.
Oh, dear me. I did something very similar, you know, a while ago. I keep a used toothbrush in my kitchen cabinet, because my cleaning lady uses it to scrub between the tiles, you see what I mean, to get the grout white, you see what I mean?
Yeah, I do exactly the same.
Right,
I've
well
been
done.
Doing that for years. I always save old toothbrushes,
yeah.
except that we don't have old toothbrushes now because we have electric toothbrushes.
Well, I don't actually. I've got a variant on the electric toothbrush. It's a toothbrush that vibrates itself, but it's not actually electric.
Oh, misses.
Yes, that's right, yeah. You press a little button on the top and it just vibrates. It doesn't plug into anything.
This is a family show, Michael.
Yeah, well,
come on.
Yeah, it is a family show, yeah. But anyway, what I was going to say is she actually left it out one time, okay? She left
Excuse me?
Miss Jones, for goodness sake. What I'm
was
saying,
she after something?
No, she wasn't, no. Oh, what I'm saying is the cleaning lady had used it to clean the grouting, but then instead of putting it back into the place it goes in the cabinet, she'd left it out. And I... Miss Jones, I've explained. I explained to her about a toothbrush here, for goodness sake. Anyway.
She's a bit of a scrubber, is she?
Oh, dear. I see. This has really got your fancy, hasn't it, Miss Jones? Hey, I like this one, all right. So, a little bit similar to yours, quite late at night, go in the bathroom. I started cleaning my teeth and then suddenly realised, to my horror, this toothbrush has changed colour, because I always only ever use blue toothbrushes and this one had red in it. And nothing in my house has red in it because I don't like the colour red. And all of a sudden...
I never knew that. I'm the same. I hate red. Cannot stand red. I did not know we had that in common.
Oh,
wow.
No, nothing in my house is red at all. I mean, look, I suppose it's primeval in that Liverpool are arch enemies to Everton playing red and we playing blue. But ever since I was a baby, my mum always said everything had to be blue for me, you know, everything. You know, my bedroom was in blue and the curtains are in blue, the carpets, everything around me now in the places I live is blue, because it's the only colour I feel comfortable with. Blue, yellow, silver, black, but no red.
Amazing, because I'm exactly the same. I never wear red.
Right.
I never wear red lipstick or red clothes, but my son favours red ever since he was a little boy. He's always loved a red shirt. Yeah, so... Someone said to me, you and your son will never really get on because you're opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, oh, well, I'm sure.
But we did get on, so I'm sure that's a load of rubbish.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a load of rubbish as well. Now, I have some very bad news for you, Miss Jones. Are your rabbits still with you?
My daughter has them in Islington at the moment.
Right, okay. Well, perhaps that's just as well. Listen to this story. A mum says her 9-year-old girl is lucky to be alive after being bitten by the family hamster. Sapphire Swanock was holding her beloved pet Blue when he that's interesting.
Talking of Blue.
Yeah, exactly. The hamster's called Blue.
As long as the hamster's not red, we're on safe ground.
Absolutely. When he suddenly planted his teeth into her finger, Mum Lucy, aged 31, got her antibiotics, but her finger started swelling while a rash spread up her arm. The beauty advisor said he drew blood and Sapphire was in a lot of pain. I got the antibiotics, assumed it would heal over, but it didn't. Lucy from Lark Hall, Somerset, feared the worst, rushed off to hospital. She had the little girl had emergency treatment to clean out the wound, because if that infection got to her heart, it would have killed her. Now, that's very worrying, isn't it?
That is really worrying, yes. But I have to tell you, you don't need to worry about my rabbits, because they never once bit anybody.
Well, it's always the first time. Always the first time.
No. Yeah, I know that because, you know, you get those stories, don't you, where a terrible tragedy happens in a family. An Alsatian attacks a newborn baby and kills it.
Yeah.
And the family members say, but we've had the dog 20 years. It's never hurt a fly. It's never attacked anybody. But they do turn.
Yeah.
Some little thing switches in their brain and they become killers.
That's right. I mean, we've talked, haven't we, in a recent podcast about Freddie the little seal, you know, who... got wiped out by the dog, but poor little thing. But anyway, yes. Now
that woman, by the way, she's a lawyer, isn't she? A QC, woman who owned the dog.
Very highly qualified lawyer.
But she didn't do it. She didn't make the dog go and kill the seal. And I feel that people have been very unfair towards her.
Well, I did a programme on this last week and I was asked by the producers, please, let's not identify the woman again. She's come in for enough... you know, really brutal stuff on social media already. So I was quite happy to go along with that because, like you, I think, you know, it's awful to... I mean, she feels worse than anybody from what I can understand. You know, it was a terrible thing that happened, but...
Of course she does. Yeah. I mean, nobody in their right mind would want their dog to go and kill a beautiful animal.
No, of course not. No, you're absolutely right. I said we were going to return to Jack Charlton. Andy Townsend's a great mate of mine. Andy was captain of Aston Villa, Chelsea and Ireland. And he was captain of Ireland whilst Jack Charlton was the boss. So Andy knows him better than anybody, you know, and spoke very, warmly about him when Jack sadly died. I think it was last year, wasn't it? Or was it this year? Last year, I think. And,
I think it was last year, yeah.
Yeah. And but one story he told was that whenever Ireland had finished playing somewhere, whether it was abroad or whether it was in Ireland or whatever, Jack would always go for a few drinks afterwards, always a few pints of Guinness. And he always insisted on saying, right, get everybody around on me, you see. And so everybody would have a drink on Jack. And then the landlord of the pub would say, right, OK, Jack, that comes to, you know, whatever it was in those days, you know, £34. And Jack would always pull out his checkbook and say, I don't carry cash because I'm the island manager. Will you take a check?
And then they frame the check and stick it on the wall because it's got his name on it.
That is absolutely the story, Leslie Ann. Absolutely. Nobody ever cashed one of Jack's checks. They ended up on a frame on the wall. You're absolutely right. I think
what a wily bugger he is, or was.
Yeah, exactly. But the reason I'm talking about signatures is because, of course, we haven't had a Beatles story, which will disappoint our millions of listeners. So I've seen a story only this morning about a Paul McCartney letter. I don't know if you've had a chance to pick up on it, but it's a story which illustrates what a really sort of nice guy Paul McCartney has always sort of been in comparison to the rather sort of harder and more brutish side of John Lennon, the man you wrote a best-selling book about. But this is a lovely story, a letter in which Paul McCartney settled a long-standing debt from before the time he achieved worldwide fame with the Beatles is to be auctioned. And this letter, right, was written to I'll read it to you. In 1958, McCartney and George Harrison visited the seaside resort of Harlech in Gwynedd, where they befriended the Brierley family. They had such a good time, they returned the next year, but made off with one of the family's blankets. Decades later, in the 1980s, Irene Brierley wrote to Paul to jokingly remind him that he had taken a blanket. McCartney wrote back with a cheque for £30 to settle our money differences, in quotes, which Irene cashed. The letter has a starting price of £3,000 and is being auctioned at memorabilia site ... or whatever. But I was just thinking to myself, why did that lady cash that cheque from Paul McCartney when he was at the height of his fame?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But what the letter is selling for £3,000?
Yes.
I've got a letter from Paul McCartney. I'll have to dig it up. Do you know what? I would not sell that.
No, of course. No. Well, you've got. What did he write to you about?
Oh, I wrote to him when his late wife Linda died.
Yes.
Because Linda was a good friend of mine. Yes. I worked. I'm sure I told you. I worked on a memoir with her that never progressed.
Yeah.
Which was called Mac the Wife. Best title ever.
Yeah.
And he didn't want it to proceed in the end, so it didn't happen. And then she contracted cancer. Sadly, she died. And I wrote to him to express my commiserations, and he wrote back.
Well, it's not nice, because he must have had thousands of letters. You know, people would have, got hold of him. But I've always thought McCartney always seemed to be a nice guy. You know what I mean? I
remember desperately nice. Oh yeah, best day of my life was having my picture taken with him.
Absolutely.
Up at Lipper, the Institute of Performing Arts, and he was so lovely to me. I was almost in tears for the rest of the day. I couldn't believe that I just spent 20 minutes chatting face to face with Paul, and how lovely he was.
And the most successful living rock star, one of the most famous men in the world, a man who's dominated the headlines for a good 60 years now. I mean, you know, it defies description as to just how big Paul McCartney is. Probably, I'd say the biggest, most famous man in the world after the President of the United States, probably. But anyway, that's for another time. But
and he's very charming and humble and very ordinary and lives a very low-key life with his new wife, Well, they've been married about 10 years, I think.
10 years now, yeah.
Nancy,
mind you, you say low-key, but they've got homes, as far as I can work out, in Arizona, the Hamptons, New York. Is it two or three in this country? Mullough Kintyre, East Sussex, Kent, London. I mean, he's got quite a few homes.
He's got the place in Maida Vale. Yeah. He's got his dad's old house up the Wirral somewhere. He's still got that house, and in that house is his original piano, his dad Jim's piano.
Okay, that's not the one that appeared in the video with James Corden, because that was in Liverpool.
Yeah, I don't know.
Anyway, there's
lots of houses anyway.
Yeah, there are. Yeah,
he's a really lovely guy, and God bless him. May he live forever. I hope he does.
Yes, and I agree as well. His brother, Mike McCarthy, what was his name? Mike McGeer.
He was Mike McGeer for a while. He changed his name when he was in The Scaffold, which was the band that had the massive hit with Lily the Pink.
We'll drink a drink a drink to Lily the Pink, the Pink, the Pink, the Saviour of the human race. For she decided
she invented medicinal compounds.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Most efficacious in every case.
Yeah, no, that's right. Yeah, it was brilliant, wasn't it? Yeah, they were quite...
I think that must be the only song, the only rock song that has the word efficacious in it. Somebody will correct me, I'm sure.
I
think it's the only one. He was also that day at Liverpool Institute Performing Arts. And I'd been in their childhood house the day before because I did that little National Trust visit that you can do, going into John Lennon's childhood home and into Paul McCartney's, where all those great songs were written.
Yes,
the only way you can get inside those houses. It's a great little tour to do. Bob Dylan's done it, Debbie Harry, all kinds of people.
Amazing.
And I say, he came up and said hi, and I said, I was in your old house the day before. Yeah. He said, did you see my pictures? There are photographs that he took, which are all framed and on the walls.
Mike McGeer?
But he's Mike McCartney again now.
Oh, is he?
A very accomplished photographer.
Very accomplished indeed. And they were quite good, The Scaffold, because they weren't just like rock stars. They were sort of poets, weren't they? And that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I really liked
them. Roger McGough, I think.
Yes, massively popular when I was a kid.
Yes.
And of course, everybody said, oh, poor him, you know, being the poor relation to Paul McCartney. But I don't think he feels like that at all.
Yeah.
And they're very fond of each other. When Mike came in, Paul McCartney was already there, and Mike came up and they hugged each other. You know, obviously genuine that was. I was standing right there.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, sadly, Mike McGeer got accused of some sort of offences, of allegations of a sexual nature, which were never proven. And he was completely exonerated. Let's make that absolutely clear from the start. But I remember the first thing we heard was that, you know, Paul McCartney had been in touch immediately and said, we're going to get you the best people. You know what I mean? I mean, the typical sort of brotherly reaction from a decent guy.
I don't remember that.
Yeah,
what was that?
It did happen a few years back. It was so brief because the allegations were made. Mike McGeer, as he was then, rigorously defended them. Paul McCartney made it absolutely clear he's pounding behind his brother, who'd assured him there was nothing to it. And it disappeared again as quickly as it arrived. But, you know, it's one of those things which really affects people very badly because people make allegations like that and it wrecks your life, you know.
Of course it does.
Yeah.
You know, we must also make clear that if the allegations are true against anybody, that these women must be supported and that their case must be seen through. But sometimes, unfortunately, people do make accusations that have no foundation.
Yes, no, I totally agree with you. Now, what I was going to say to you, Ms. Jones, is have you ever suffered a heartbreak split-up which might have led to your death. Getting dumped really can break your heart, according to research. Overwhelming stress, such as rejection or grief, triggers neurons in the brain which regulate the heart and can lead to heart failure. So, you know, you can die of a broken heart, official.
You literally can. This is broken heart syndrome, properly known as Takotsubo cardiomyopathy.
Right.
And it refers to sudden unexplained death from traumatic events. Mm-hmm. It occurs when one of the heart's chambers, the left ventricle, suddenly expands and weakens. So your heart then can't pump the blood around your body.
Yes.
And it packs up. Yeah. It does occur as a reaction to a surge of adrenaline after extreme physical or mental stress. Mm-hmm. So yes, if somebody dumps you and you weren't expecting it, as happened to me, it can cause extreme shock. And it can kill you. So you can die of a broken heart.
Yeah, well,
glad I didn't, though, because still here and I'm over it now. Oh, yay.
No, we're all very glad you didn't, Miss Jones. Thank you very much indeed. Where would we be without the rock chick writer extraordinaire? But I'm going to... The point is, I could be a prime candidate for this because you described that disease the way it was. The disease I carry and have done for the last 15 years is called dilated cardiomyopathy, okay? It's another form of the myopathy, which affects hearts. Myopathy meaning pathetic, i.e. pathetic performing heart. And I've got all those symptoms. The left ventricle in my heart is flabby and weak and does not pump blood properly. And that's why I have to keep walking as much as I possibly can just to try and keep up the strength of the flow of blood and the pumping and all that kind of stuff. But it is extremely serious if you, if it goes wrong on you. And I sometimes forget I'm walking around with this all the time because you've got to learn to live with it. But I've never heard of somebody actually dying of grief like that. And I didn't believe it to be true.
Yeah, well, obviously it is. Apparently, it came to the fore during the 90s,
right.
And mainly in Japan to begin with. So perhaps being dumped by your partner was particularly big in Japan at that time.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't personally know anyone who's died of a broken heart, but I'm well aware that you can do.
That's right. Talking about broken hearts, there's a new report out saying that it looks like there is a new initiative to try and get the Gallagher brothers back together. They've apparently formed a company where they're both listed as directors. And the thought is that this might be a preview to Oasis getting back together again at some, the next big outdoor festival. I don't know what you hear on the grapevine, Miss Jones.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry to be cynical about it, but this reunion would be like the Eagles, when the Hell Freezes Over tour.
Yeah.
Having said that they would never get back together ever until Hell Freezes Over, they then did so. And why did they do so? For the money.
Yes.
So there's only one reason why the Gallaghers would reform as Oasis, and that is for a big payday. Mm. I think they've had it now, really. I think they should not look back in anger. They represented young, angry men back in the day. They're 48 and 53 years old now.
Yep.
Their following was all about youth anger and being misunderstood and rising up against that. But those fans have grown up now and they don't feel that way anymore. So are they a big nostalgia act? I can't really see it.
Yeah, well, I kind of feel a bit that way as well. And also, I think there'd be some disingenuity about it, if you see
good
what I mean.
Word. Very good word.
Yes, thank you. Because Noel apparently got very, very angry when he accused Liam of sending messages which were almost sort of threatening his family, you know what I mean? His niece, i.e. Noel's daughter, saying not nice things allegedly and that kind of stuff. But his level of anger then was, he used that famous expression, Liam is like a man in the world of soup, armed only with a fork. He sort of mocked him terribly and has done ever since. So I agree with you. I think it could only be a stunt. But it says here, for the first time in the dozen years since they split, there are rumours of return, found substance, a company called Cosmic Kite, has been spotted on company's house register, set up last month, listed as being for motion picture production activities. And Noel and Liam are listed as company directors. So, you know, who knows?
Well, that sounds like they're going to make a film of time in Oasis.
Yeah, but when you go into this story, it says a prelude to the film would have to be a concert to revive interest in the group. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. All a bit mercenary, isn't it?
Well, look, I'm a capitalist. I believe in people making money. I believe in people earning big money. I believe in talented people being rewarded, you know, comparative to their genius and all that kind of stuff. So, and I wouldn't knock it, but I tend to agree with you. I think the memory of Oasis is now best left in the memory, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, no, I think so too.
You know, I'm not sure I'd want to see them get together again anyway. Now then.
Moving swiftly on.
moving swiftly on. Who said this? I fantasize about younger men. I'll tell you who it is. It's Jane Fonda.
Jane Fonda, 83. Yeah. Why doesn't she shut up? She's why don't her hormones pack up? She's always banging on about sex. I think, give it up, woman. You've had your time.
Yeah.
She's just trying to stay current. She's 83.
I know.
You know, there's something very distasteful about this, I'm afraid, and I hate to be ageist.
Yes.
But really, you know, keep it in your pants.
Oh, dear. Right, Miss Jones. You know, I've got the instruction loud and clear. it's terribly different to Joan Collins, who, of course, is happily married to Percy, isn't it?
Yeah.
So let me go to the other end of the age scale and tell you that I've been reading about Lady Gaga getting into some new projects. Lady Gaga is only 35. She seems to have been around for about the last 20 years. And my problem with Lady Gaga is she's appeared in so many different guises. If somebody showed me a picture of her, I wouldn't be able to recognise her. I don't actually know what she looks like.
Well, yes, you do, because she was in an amazing version of A Star is Born, the film, in 2018. And that is how she looks.
Well, I haven't seen that film.
Oh, well, you need to see that film. It's a brilliant, brilliant remake of that classic film. She's Stephanie Germanotta, of course. She took the name Lady Gaga after the Queen song, Radio Gaga, because she was a massive Queen fan.
Oh, did she? I didn't know that. Yeah.
And she started performing when she was a teenager. She's an amazing songwriter.
Yeah.
Came to prominence in about 2008.
Yeah.
With songs like Poker Face, which everybody knows. She's very creative lyrically and melodically. Yeah. And she's worth about $275 million, you know.
That's
so successful. But my favourite album of hers is the jazz album she did with Tony Bennett,
right,
called Cheek to Cheek,
yeah,
in 2014. But she does everything. She does techno, she does electronic, she does country albums. You know, she's very versatile. I think she'll be around for a really long time.
Yeah, well, good luck to her. As I say, I like talent to be identified and rewarded. Right. OK, Miss Jones, well, thank you very much indeed for your time today and to the time of our millions of listeners for listening to this podcast. Nice to be able to say that we've passed that 1.5 million barrier of listeners, Miss Jones. So I must congratulate you on all your contributions to Life on Planet Porky. Thank you very much.
And congratulations to you, Michael. And thank you to everybody who tunes in and has become part of our Barmy Army.
Indeed, indeed they have. Right, OK, folks, until the next time, that's it from Life on Planet Porky. Remember, stay safe and enjoy your freedom. I've got a variant on the electric toothbrush. It's a toothbrush that vibrates itself, but it's not actually electric.
Oh, misses.
Yes, that's right, yeah. You press a little button on the top and it just vibrates. It doesn't plug into anything.
This is a family show, Michael.
Yeah, well,
come on.
It's a family show, yeah. But anyway, what I was going to say is she actually left it out one time, okay? She left
Excuse me?
Miss Jones, for goodness sake. What I'm
was
saying,
she after something?
No, she wasn't, no. Oh, what I'm saying is the cleaning lady had used it to clean the grouting, but then instead of putting it back into the place it goes in the cabinet, she'd left it out. And I... Miss Jones, I've explained. I explained that you're about a toothbrush here, for goodness sake. Anyway.
She's a bit of a scrubber, is she?
Oh, dear. I see. This has really got your fancy, hasn't it, Miss Jones? Hey, I like this one, all right.
Kate Moss said, if you don't shut up, I'm going to smack you. So Jackie carried on singing. So Kate smacked her. And then next thing, they were on the floor brawling. It was like a playground fight. And Doherty standing at the edge going, Kate, Kate, Kate. It was one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
Really? God, brawling with Kate Moss on the floor of the Groucho Club. That's quite something, isn't it? I wish there were some pictures of that. It'd be great. We'll drink a drink a drink to Lily the Pink, the Pink, the Pink, the Saviour of the human race. For she decided medicinal
something. No, she invented medicinal compounds.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
Military veterans and active duty service members. You could become a certified cyber warrior with just 12 weeks of training at My Computer Career. Cybersecurity specialists are in high demand, and IT pros with these skills often enjoy abundant opportunity and a great lifestyle. Protect our people, liberty, and treasured institutions from cyber threats. SkillBridge and other VA benefits are available to those who qualify. Learn more at mycomputercareer.edu/CWP. That's mycomputercareer.edu/CWP.